The time now is 3 o'clock, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO for Wednesday, October 23rd. I'm your host, Lisa Fu. We'll talk with keyboardist Barney McClure about Swinging in the Rain, an evening of cabaret this Friday. We'll learn about immunizations. Taku Roller Sports Club will tell us about family roller skating. Kelsey Johnston will be here to highlight this Saturday's No Umbrellas fashion show. And we'll talk GED with Kate Pressing and Mary McCafferty from The Learning Connection. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more, all on today's Juno Afternoon. First is National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez from Fairbanks, Alaska. Sexual exploitation of young people was among the topics discussed Tuesday at the Elders and Youth Conference in Fairbanks. Josh Lowers from Covenant House, Alaska, talked about sex trafficking. His organization works with runaway and homeless teens. Lowers says youth are especially vulnerable to adults who might befriend them in order to sell them for sexual encounters.
We're seeing this in Anchorage. We know of 20, 25 youth just in the last 3 months that we are serving that are engaged in this in some way, that have some sort of exploiter that is exploiting them and is using them and is harming them.
Lowers shared tips about how to recognize signs of trafficking online. He encouraged young people to reach out and ask questions if a friend goes missing online after moving to a city.
Be proactive. Investigate. Call around where they are. See if anybody's heard from them. See what has been happening with them. They may be in trouble, and they may need your help.
Lowers encouraged elders to follow teens' online activity and ask more questions if a young person suddenly wants to travel or move away from their village. Robbie Romero and Red Thunder are headlining a concert in Fairbanks to advocate for the protection of indigenous hunting and fishing rights. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Hunt, Fish, Share, Rock the Native Vote concert is happening on the eve of the opening of the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention. Concert Planning Committee member Barbara Blake says it's put together by people who have united behind a pro-Native subsistence message.
To me, it means that my grandma and my grandfather won't be criminalized for hunting and fishing and gathering traditional ways, that they will be allowed to be healthy people.
Blake says the Fairbanks concert takes off on a successful rally with the same theme staged during last year's AFN convention in Anchorage. Taos, New Mexico-based Robbie Romero is Apache and Pueblo, but has long supported Alaska Natives' fight to protect subsistence.
It speaks to the right to self-determination, the right to live off the land, protect the land, care for our relations, which is complicated, it's involved, it's not just about hunting and fishing.
Romero, who travels the world to produce Native issue-themed music and documentaries, says he feels like a local in Alaska.
And I've been here about 5 or 6 times, and I've been in a lot of the villages, and I want to stand in solidarity with my brothers and sisters.
The Hunt, Fish, Share, Rock the Native Vote concert also features the Alaska Native music groups Bumyewa and Shot Time. For National Native News, I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alaska.
People running a Lacouture harvest camp plan to spend the winter there, despite not having an agreement with the northern Wisconsin county. Mike Simonson reports.
Spokesman Paul DeMain says they're winterizing by double walling and insulating wigwams. He says it's important to stay there, too, since the DNR and the geoscientists found asbestos-like fibers on the proposed mining site, where mining company GTAC might conduct rock sampling.
They're going to try to keep the area open for people to observe what's going on there, especially since GTAC says asbestos, yes or no, we're going in to do the bulk sampling. Perhaps this winter we'll be there as well, and after GTAC leaves, we'll be there for years after that.
They opened the then LCO Harvest and Educational Camp in May with the blessing of the Iron County Forestry Committee. 2 months later, that same committee threatened to evict them and press criminal charges, saying the county forestry rules only allow 2 weeks of camping. LCO Tribal Chairman Mick Isham says they're doing research on maple syrup harvesting and the plants and resources of that area.
If the Geologic Society was coming out there, or a historical society, to do a dig in an area, they're going to be there until the project's done. They're not camping. They're doing a research project.
Isham hopes to come to an agreement with Iron County, but for now, they're stuck over camping. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
In October 1988, Congress enacted the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. It established federal regulations for gaming and protects it as a means of generating tribal revenue. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we have two special guests in our studio. We have Barney McClure and Jesslyn Rintala. Welcome, the two of you.
Hi.
Hi, thanks.
So, Barney, you are a master jazz pianist and singing teacher, and you've been coming up to Juno for how many years now?
Since 1999 was the first one.
Okay.
The first cabaret.
Yeah. It's a long time. How did you get your start in music?
See, it's hard to remember because it was about 147 years ago. I was walking around the college that I was going to at the time, studying math and science. That was my passion. And I heard a guy, his name was Phil White, playing jazz piano in his practice room. So I snuck in. There were other people in there. Snuck in to listen to him. And I came out and said, that's it. That's what I want to do the rest of my life. I went home, bought a piano, and haven't done anything since.
Wow. Did you know that?
Wow. No, that's news on me, but what a great story.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's great. Okay, so when did you start teaching?
Interestingly, pretty soon. I mean, I didn't have any lessons or anything, so I didn't really know what I was doing. Everything was intuitive. And I used my mathematical mind to figure out a lot of it, I think. But unfortunately, I went back to college in San Diego the next year, and then one of the professors had me teach a night class in theory, which I mean, I was ashamed. I couldn't tell him how little I knew, but there I was.
So you've been teaching for a long time.
Yes, yes, and good for me in a way that it was good for me that I started early because I learned a lot of good habits and a lot of good intuitive things to how to work with people. What I'm struggling with this is because I don't know how to describe. Most jazz musicians cannot translate their craft.
Mm.
When they start talking to you, it's immediately over your head. Mm-hmm. That's where they're living, in their head. And so I learned early on that the basics were what people really want to know.
Okay. So I have you two in here today to talk about Friday's Cabaret, Swingin' in the Rain.
Yes.
So Friday's Cabaret is a culmination of 5 days of workshop. Barney, you're in the midst of the workshops right now.
Correct.
How are they going?
Wonderful. As a matter of fact, if anything sets this a year apart from other years, is that, man, the talent level just keeps going up. And the new people coming in, they all perform and sing well. It's really been great.
So how many participants do you have in the workshop?
We have 18 going on 19, I think, at this point. And we can handle up to 30. It's not actually all that late if somebody's listening right this minute to join in. They're going to have to pedal fast. But
well, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a variety of skill levels.
Well, I wash dishes and I can crochet.
Well, I mean, skill levels of singers who are doing the workshop?
Yes. Yes, we do. That, of course, is the norm with this kind of thing, because cabaret used to mean one thing back in the 1940s during World War II, and we always could identify exactly how it was going to sound. But nowadays it means anything from a Walt Disney movie tune to a country western to a jazz to you name it. It's all over the map.
Okay, so can one of you explain, for people who might not know, what is a cabaret? I mean, we hear this word all the time, but...
Cabaret began as a... sort of the dark side of life type of music in Europe, and particularly France and Germany, excuse me, where American jazz had been very popular in those countries in the late teens and 1920s, and it really caught on much bigger than it did in the United States, and it was such a contrast to their types of music. But when certain political powers came in into being in the 1940s. It became an underground music because Western culture was not all that popular with the politicians, let's say. And so it became sort of an underground music. We think of people like Marlene Dietrich, who's the little bird, Edith Piaf, you know.
What will Friday's cabaret look like, or what will it include?
Well, both Marlene and Edith will be there. It's a, it's an amazing transmission. What will it look like? I don't know. I encourage people to get into the message of their tune. And if that means costume, behavior, even props, it's a little bit like theater in that regard. They only have one, maybe max two tunes, and so their whole show is built around that for each person. And I can't even tell you what it, because Juno always surprises me on performance night. So.
Oh, wow, that's
exciting.
I
just come prepared to be surprised.
Swinging in the Rain. Yeah, talk about that.
So, Friday night's performance, the very aptly named Swingin' in the Rain, that will be at starting at 7 o'clock at the Jack. And so these 20 or so participants who've been working with Barney all week long, pedaling fast, like he said, will take to the stage with one or two of their numbers. And, you know, it will be a surprise, like Barney said, but there are some things that we can always count on in Juno, which is we have, and I feel like I say this all the time, just this completely impossible level of talent for a town this size.
It's amazing.
It is, and it will be showcased on stage Friday night, and just the caliber, the ownership of the microphone and the stage and the costumes and the sequins and the high heels, can I just say? I'm perpetually astonished by what comes out of people's closets and, you know, throats and mouths every year with this cabaret. It is a fantastic show with just lots of energy and, you know, that Juno talent.
Okay.
So anyway, 7 o'clock Friday at the Jack. We do have tickets at jazzandclassics.org or, of course, the usual suspects, the Jack box office, both Hearthside locations. Or, you know, give us a call, 463-3378. If you have any questions or for tickets or if you are maybe considering getting on stage, pedaling really fast for these last few days of the workshop with Barney, we'll make it work. Just give us a call.
Okay, so we heard a few little teasers, some sequins are involved, some high heels. Can we get a teaser on what kind of songs we might hear?
I think I've heard the word love a few times.
You know, I noticed that. There's a couple of love songs. Surprises, surprises. I think several things are playing into this, one of which is, let's face it, it's Juno, and people hear that. The pool is deep, you know. The resources are great. So they're coming up with stuff. And secondly, with the electronic media, people have access to stuff that I would have had to search in a library or go through old music for weeks before finding, and now they just pull it off the air, and they're always surprising me.
Okay.
I used to brag that I know 40,000 tunes, and that's probably a conservative number. I do know a lot of tunes. But the minute I always brag about that, somebody pulls up some tune I've never heard of. You know, I stop bragging.
Okay, so you'll be playing on the piano Friday night?
I play piano and accompany.
Okay, great. Okay, Friday night starts at 7.
Yes.
At the Jack, Swinging in the Rain.
Yes.
Come and listen to some surprising tunes and listen
come
to...
Come and see your neighbors, your workmates, your relatives. You know, you're going to know somebody in that group of people.
Great. And we're going to listen to Barney McClure play right now with the tune, Here's That Rainy Day. Thank you, too.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we have Kate Helfrich in the studio, the public health nurse in Juno. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you, Lisa.
So you're here to talk about something that's very pertinent to this time of year.
It is. It seems like we have again entered our annual influenza or flu season for the year. So I just wanted to come on and remind everyone about all the different ways that they can reduce their risk of getting the flu and also reduce the risk of their families getting the flu and our community as a whole. As we know, flu kind of is unpredictable. Last year we saw it hit a little bit early, and we have no idea when this year we're going to start to see any increase in flu activity. Right now it is pretty low throughout the United States, including in Alaska, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't keep it in the back of our minds. So the one thing that is the most effective in preventing the flu is, of course, getting your influenza vaccine. And I know those are available in a variety of different places in Juno, from 6 months of age all the way up. So if you haven't received your flu vaccine this year yet, it's something I highly encourage you to do. And one thing a lot of people aren't aware of is that it does take time for the flu vaccine to work. So after receiving a flu vaccine, whether it's the nasal influenza vaccine or the shot that goes into the arm, it does take about 2 full weeks for our bodies to recognize it and build up that immunity. So you're still susceptible to the flu in those 2 weeks, which brings me back to my point why it's really important to get it now rather than wait until flu season hits, because then you're going to be better prepared, of course.
Okay, so where can people get the flu immunization?
Well, I'm going to be a little self-serving here and, of course, mention that you can receive it at the Juno Public Health Center. There are some eligibility requirements to receive it through us. For kids, though, which is a great group to receive the flu vaccine, so for kids, anyone who is 35 months of age or younger is 100% eligible to receive a flu vaccine with us at the Juno Public Health Center, regardless of insurance status. For all other children, 35 months to 18 years of age, anyone who has Medicaid, Denali KidCare, doesn't have health insurance, or whose health insurance doesn't cover the vaccine, who they have not met a deductible or a copay, so they weren't going to get the vaccine, they can all come to the Public Health Center to receive the flu. Now, for adults, it's a little bit different. For adults, we offer the flu vaccine to anybody who doesn't have insurance, whose insurance does not pay for the vaccine, or who are enrolled in certain insurances that don't cover the vaccine. That would be a reason to give us a call over at the health center and make an appointment with us to receive that. And, of course, if you have a doctor in town, we highly encourage you to give your doctor's office a call. And I also know that most of the local pharmacies are carrying some version of the flu vaccine this year as well.
Okay, so where is your office?
So the Juno Public Health Center is at 3412 Glacier Highway, and that's right across from the Twin Lakes Playground, right there in Twin Lakes.
Okay, and then how can they get in touch with you?
So the best way to get in touch with us at the Public Health Center is to give us a call during our business hours, which are 8 a.m. through 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. And our phone number is 465-3353. Again, that's 465-3353. And, of course, if you have questions just in general about the flu or where you can get a vaccine, that's also information that we do have, and we'd be very happy to provide that to anybody who has those questions.
Okay, so should people make an appointment first?
They should definitely call us to make an appointment, yeah, but we're pretty flexible and willing to work with people as well.
Okay, so if people are eligible, kids or adults, to get it through you, does that mean the cost, there's no cost?
So for the Juno Public Health Center, we do operate on what's called a sliding fee scale. The maximum amount that would be the value of your services would be $28 at the Public Health Center for one vaccine. Most people do receive a discount, though, based on their income, and absolutely nobody is denied the service of an influenza vaccine if they're unable to pay. So even if there was a charge but you felt unable to pay at that time, you could still get that service.
Okay, that's really great to know. When you said that right now the
the flu is low in a lot. What do you mean by that? Like, are there numbers?
Yeah. So over the course of a flu season and even in the off season, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention monitor flu activity throughout the United States and in each state individually. And what they do is they have certain sites that they utilize to kind of measure the flu. It's not what we call a reportable illness. So if you went into your doctor's office, they probably wouldn't test you to see if it was really the flu that was making you sick, but at some sites they do designate them to test for the flu to see how many people are coming in with flu illness and who actually have the flu. And then they also kind of manage to record if those people had the flu vaccine or not, and that helps them to also get the effectiveness of that flu vaccine for the year. So right now those sites are actively looking at flu cases and seeing how many are coming in that they diagnose, and that's the numbers that then get given to the CDC, who posts them on their website. So if you're ever interested in knowing what the national flu activity is, or if you're just wondering about Alaska in general, www.cdc.org is a great resource to know that information and a whole bunch more about the flu.
Okay, so right now Alaska has low numbers of...
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And how about the rest of the country?
Also low right now. Mm-hmm. We do tend to see historically that our biggest month for flu activity tends to be February. Not always the case, though. If you think back to last year, most of our flu did hit early on in the season. And again, that's why you just need to, get your vaccines early, use really good hand washing techniques to help prevent it from the get-go, since we never quite know when it's going to show up and start spreading quickly.
Okay, and how long will you be offering these flu shots?
We will be offering them until they run out. And when they run out, we will get more. So usually what tends to happen is flu vaccine is offered throughout the flu season. We had little bits and pieces left over even as of June last year. So most of the flu vaccine itself won't expire until June, and so it'll be offered as long as providers are ordering it and offering it.
How many do you guys have right now at the office?
Ooh, off the top of my head, I'm not sure. But at least with the state of Alaska, we always have the opportunity to order more. So the second we start to run low, we'll restock our supply. So it shouldn't be a concern about a supply issue. Right now, they have made enough flu vaccine to hopefully cover everyone.
Okay. Is it true that when you do get the immunization, you come down with a little...
You can. Great question. So what we like to say is you can't actually catch the flu from the flu vaccine. The flu vaccine itself is a dead virus, so it can't cause the illness. But some of those yucky feelings that you have when you're sick, that's not necessarily the virus, but our body's responding to the virus. It says, oh my gosh, something's in here, and we're going to change our environment a little bit in hopes of getting rid of it. So kind of those signs and those symptoms might happen with the flu vaccine. So what we might see is just a general yucky feeling for a day. Nothing that you'd have to stay home from work for, nothing that your kid would have to skip school for, but you just might notice you're a little crankier, a little bit more irritable, or a little bit more bleh feeling is how I usually describe it to my patients, but maybe a little achy. With the nasal flu, what I tend to hear is a little bit of a sore throat the next day or maybe a stuffy nose. Other than that, though, we see very few reactions to the vaccine itself. Sometimes if you get the shot, you just have a little bit of soreness, tenderness in the arm, but you can't actually catch the flu from the flu vaccine.
Okay, great. Thanks for clarifying that. On top of getting the immunization, are there other tips about how to stay flu-free?
Yeah, certainly. So one of the other things, and this kind of answers your question, but it's going to go back to my vaccines too, is if for some reason you can't get the vaccine or other people in your family can't get it, maybe you have a really severe allergy to eggs and your provider isn't offering one of the vaccines that would be able to be given to you, or if you have an infant in your home who's under that 6-month age limit, they can't get the flu. So the best thing that you can do is to vaccinate those around you. So make sure that those people coming in contact with that infant, or if you don't have your flu vaccine, making sure that others get it, and promoting that is a great option. And of course, I always recommend hand washing. Hand washing is huge, not just for the flu, but for all illnesses. We tend to do a lot of touching and spreading that way, but more than anything, we'll touch things with germs and then we'll touch our face too. So that tends to spread a little bit of the flu and germs. Now, something I also really thought was interesting that I learned today when I was looking at the CDC website is that people can spread the flu up to from themselves to others from about 6 feet feet away. And that's a ways. That's taller than me. So 6 feet away. And that's because when you cough or when you sneeze or even if you're talking very enthusiastically and that saliva droplet is traveling across to someone else and has the potential to somehow be picked up by them. So that brings me to the last thing I recommend. Make sure that you're covering your mouth when you cough, covering your nose when you sneeze, and of course, washing your hands if you do cough into your hands.
Wow, that's a pretty amazing fact that you can catch the flu
from scary, right?
6 feet away. Well, thank you, Kate. We've been speaking with Kate Helfrich, the public health nurse in Juneau. She's reminding everyone to get your flu shot in preparation for flu season. Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you.
Right now, we're going to listen to Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 23rd of October, 2013. It's the birthday of two doctors who became writers. Poet Robert Bridges, born in Kent, England, 1844, a doctor at numerous hospitals in London, author of many poems, plays. And Michael Crichton, born Chicago, 1942, author of Jurassic Park, State of Fear, and creator of the TV series ER. It was on this day, 1978, the stories of John Cheever was published, which won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award that year and became one of the few collections of short stories ever to make the New York Times bestseller list. Cheever died just 4 years after the book came out. And it was on this day in 1920 the novel Main Street by Sinclair Lewis was published. He had been thinking about writing a novel about small-town life for many years. He was going to make the main character a lawyer. He wrote 20,000 words but didn't like it and threw it out. And then in 1916 he brought his wife Gracie on a visit to Sauk Center, Minnesota, his hometown. They stayed with his parents. And he was embarrassed, he cringed, to see the interactions between his parents in the town and his well-educated wife from New York City. And so he decided to redo the novel as a book about a young city woman who comes to a small town as the bride of the local doctor. He started writing it in November 1919, wrote his first draft, 221,000 words, in just about 3 months. He kept revising. He cut out all but a few pages of the first 30,000 words of the novel, sent it off to his publisher, Harcourt Brace. They did a final edit, and the book, which had been entitled The Village Virus, was retitled Main Street, and it came out on this day in 1920. Lewis's previous books had not sold very well, but he was hoping to sell 25,000 copies. They met that goal by November, and within a few years, Main Street had sold 2 million copies. The Pulitzer Prize Committee recommended Main Street, but the trustees of Columbia University vetoed that and instead gave the prize to Edith Wharton for her book Age of Innocence. 2 years later, the same thing happened with Lewis's next novel, Babbitt. The committee voted to give him the Pulitzer and was overruled by the trustees. 3 years later, he was offered the Pulitzer Prize for Aerosmith, but refused it. But in 1930, he became the first American to win the Nobel Prize, and he accepted that. Here's a poem for today by Haley Lighthouser. The old woman gets drunk with the moon. The moon is rising everywhere. The moon's my favorite easy chair, my tin pot top, my green plum tree, my brassy buttoned cavalry tap dancing up a crystal stair. Oh, watch them pitch and take the air like shoe-fly pies and signal flares, like clotted cream and bumblebees, the moons are rising. How hits the spot, how debonair, what swooned balloons of savoir-faire, what purr of rain-blurred bright marquees that linger late that wait for me, who will someday rest my cold bones there in moons that rise up everywhere. Haley Lighthouser's poem, The Old Woman Gets Drunk with the Moon, from her collection Swoop, published by Grey Wolf Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
That was Writer's Almanac on a Juno afternoon. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and we have another great guest in the studio right now. We have Miji Moto. Hello.
Hi.
So she's with the Taku Roller Sports Club, and you're here to talk about
Skate City coming up this Sunday.
Okay, great. So we were kind of just chatting during Writer's Almanac. Miji Moto, what is that?
That is my nickname. I actually had my nickname given to me prior to my derby life when I was riding motorcycles with the Christian Motorcycle Association. And my biker brothers named me Miji Moto because when I wore my leathers, I would strut. And they thought it was very funny because I'm only 5 feet tall. So I guess it made me feel taller. So then when I started roller derby, you come up, one of the fun things about it is creating your persona and your name. And so I said, well, I know there's not going to be another Miji Moto, and so you have to register your name. And so I registered as Miji Moto, and I registered my number as 42 because that's how old I was when I started roller derby. And I've had that nickname since 2005. And now I use it for everything. Everybody knows me as Miji.
Okay, interesting. And so what is the significance of having a skater name?
It's kind of a bonding experience. Part of that is that in roller derby, so many skaters come from what other people might consider a humdrum life kind of thing. And in so many newspaper articles and media, you'll see, you know, librarian by day, but derby girl by night kind of thing. And we're derby girls all day long, you know. And it's such an awesome experience to be able to bond with a bunch of women and become this person. It's this freeing kind of empowerment of just being somebody that you didn't know you were. And my husband always says that I am the nicest person in the world to put my skates on, and because I want to knock people down. So he said, you know, when you're Miji Moto on skates, you're pretty tough. And I said, it's amazing what a 5 foot person can do when you give them a name and the right gear. And you do feel extraordinarily empowered. And so then I always tease him, like, you better watch out. There's Miji Moto in the house.
What is your roller skating history?
I actually started skating when I was a child. I can't remember not having skates.
Oh, okay.
I'm from the old school of when you had the metal skates with that you strapped on your tennis shoes. And I remember skating outside on the sidewalks and doing hockey stops and making sparks, thinking I was probably the coolest kid in town. And so I grew up in skating rinks. I managed a skating rink in my early 20s. And I have been around skating rinks my whole life. And so then I actually was a speed skater. I did ballroom skating. And then I actually, when I moved to Juneau, I was already a derby girl. I skated with the Salt City Derby Girls and then moved here and joined the Juneau Roller Girls right at the beginning when they were just getting started. And so I was able to be with them that first part of their time here and got to skate in the first bout. And then I became a coach and co-coached with my friend Money Honey. And after about a year and a half of that, we wanted to go in a different direction. And because the Juneau Roller Girls are awesome, they're very, very competitive. And I had done my time as a competitive skater, and I wanted to do something different and just really build roller skating as a healthy lifestyle in Juneau. So that's why we started Taku Roller Sports. We wanted to get people on skates regardless of their gender, their height, their weight, their skating ability, their age. There's a place for everybody in Taku Roller Sports to just get on skates and have some fun. And
okay.
So that's how we got that going.
Great. Okay, so Taku Roller Sports, you guys are the one that's throwing this event?
We're working with Centennial Hall. Steve Pfister facilities manager there came to me and he said, Midgey, I want to have skating here. And I said, I think that's an awesome idea. How can I make that happen? So we partnered together. This is our second event, and we're doing three in a row. We'll have another one in November, and it's called Skate City. And Skate City is harkening back to the days of old world roller skating. There used to be a skating rink, I understand, in Juneau quite a few years ago, and we are trying to revive that. And so the biggest venue is Centennial Hall. It's a wonderful floor to skate on. They have a disco ball. We'll have DJ White Chocolate there. For this particular Skate City, we're doing a lot of Halloween-themed things. It's very, very family-oriented. We encourage everybody to come and bring their children. If you don't have skates and you only have rollerblades, bring your blades. We do have a few pairs of skates that we can loan out for the time, but unfortunately, we do not have hundreds of pairs of skates, so we do take donations to support that, and that is to get children skates. And also, as put a little plug, I have heard through rumors and grapevine that the previous owners of the skating rink that was here in Juneau may have some or know of where there are hundreds of pairs of skates in Juneau. So if anybody knows where these skates are, please let Talk of Roller Sports know, because our goal is to get these skates and get people skating. And so maybe somebody knows somebody who knows somebody and can get word to us where we can find some skates.
Ooh,
yeah,
that's
hundreds.
A good story. No. Where are those skates?
Yes, the mystery.
And that would be great for this event, because
would be fantastic, not just for this event, but ongoing. We really want to keep this going. We're not a one-hit wonder. We want to keep things rolling, pun intended. But we also have other events that we do with Taco Roller Sports. For example, through community schools, we have our kids' skate camp. And one of the big hurdles for parents is getting skates for their children. And if you have kids that you want to sign up for this, shoot us an email. Let us see what we can do about getting some skates. If you can get your kids a helmet, we have loaner skates, and we have loaner pads and safety gear, and we'll work around it. We're self-funded, so we're doing everything we can, one kid at a time, to get them on skates. And so we do that on Sunday afternoons from noon to 1 at Marie Drake. And then on Thursday nights, we have an adult class that we run at the Jack, which is also an open skate for adults from 6:30 to 8:30. Skates or blades, and all safety gear must be worn, but we have lots of loaner stuff for that as well.
Okay, so let's talk real quickly, details one more time about the Skate City Family Skates.
Fantastic. Skate City is going to be an open skate for families. Kids 3 to 10 are $5. 11 and up is $10. There will be games, prizes. We'll have goodie bags for kids at the door. It is a Halloween event, so costumes are encouraged. Just nothing too long so you don't trip on it. We don't want anybody falling. You do not have to have safety gear for Skate City, but we do recommend helmets if you have them, just to be on the safe side.
Okay, great. And people can just go there and pay
just,
there?
Yep, you pay at the door. It's a cash thing. You just pay at the door.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Midgey, for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Talking about Taku Roller Sports Club. So everyone should come out for Family Skate. Thank you.
Thanks.
Listening to a Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we have Kelsey Johnston in the studio. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi. Lisa. Thanks for having me today.
So you are the coordinator of this year's No Umbrellas Fashion Show, which is Saturday at Centennial Hall.
Yes.
For those who haven't been to No Umbrellas before, what is it?
No Umbrellas essentially is a fundraiser. The Alaskan Brewing Company every year chooses a charity to support throughout the year. This year it's SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living. So essentially everything that happens at the show, all the proceeds go to SAIL. In addition to that, not only is it a fundraiser, it's an awesome night of entertainment. So it is what it says, a fashion show, No Umbrellas, a fashion show for real Alaskans. And the name kind of says it all. You know, the one thing that we have in common in Juneau as, you know, fashionistas or whatnot is that none of us use umbrellas. So that's kind of what we were going for with this. And it's going to be our third year. It's going to be a really good time. Halloween weekend, so definitely a costume contest during intermission. And then we'll also have a silent auction to help raise money for SAIL. Lots of cool prizes. And then on top of that, we couldn't do it without other local businesses that are participating. So we have dozens, literally, of people, whether they're in the fashion show, modeling their own fashions, or just donating to the silent auction. But it's a great time.
Okay, so you said before this is real fashion for real Alaskans.
Yes.
There's no concept that we don't carry umbrellas here. Can you give an example of what's another fashion that's for real Alaskans?
Another fashion that's for real Alaskans. Well, really, so our program includes everything from, you know, alpaca international designs, very high-end, to beer gear, a very good staple in Juneau, to Aurora Project. We see that everywhere, Juneau Roller Girls. So really what it's saying is there are some real true only in Juneau businesses that all, even though they spread a different array of fashion, it's still something that that you would never use an umbrella for, or so whatever your style is, whether it's higher end, whether it's Aurora Project, whether it's beer gear, whether it's fair weather, you know, it's available here, and we're gonna highlight it, and we're all, you know, gonna work as a team and just highlight Juneau fashion.
How many designers will be there?
Actually, our show has 12. Different local businesses represented. Also, like Silver Bow and Miss Scarlett's actually has something really fun planned, and Juneau Drug. And so 12 just in the show itself, but then we have dozens of contributors outside of that. Annie Kales, Trove, you know, all your favorite local retailers, NAO, you know, Nugget Outfitters. Foggy Mountain. I mean, it's pretty much you name it. They've been involved. So that's pretty awesome.
Okay, so people who go, there's a fashion show, so they're models there.
Yes.
Who are the models?
Models are all your friends and family, actually. It's just all volunteers, so people from all over Juneau, basically, and everywhere from, I know there's a couple of, like, younger, you know, 7-8-year-olds all the way up to, you know, 60-70-year-olds, so it's going to be a wide array of all your friends and family, which is great. And that actually reminds me really quick. I do want to mention it is a 21 and over event.
Okay.
It's sponsored by the AKB, so we're going to have 21 and over. But,
Okay, so what are some more details about the event? Tickets, cost?
Yeah, I was going to say $25 in advance, $30 out the door. You can purchase tickets at jahc.org. Both brewery locations, so the downtown and the Lemon Creek location, and Hearthside Books. You can get the online tickets all the way up until 5 o'clock that day, too. So lots of options. Doors open at 6, and we're going to just begin with shopping at the silent auction and beer cocktails. Rendezvous put together an awesome menu where they're going to be highlighting some of our good our specialty beers, like our pumpkin porter, that kind of thing, as well as you know, they'll also have wine and stuff available. But and then the show itself starts at 7. And so also it is Halloween weekend again. So come in costume because we are having a Halloween costume contest right at intermission. Really awesome prizes to give away for that.
Oh, cool. Who are the judges for the costume contest?
I think it's going to be Andy Klein, who is, you know, personality around.
Yeah.
And also, we're going to have somebody from SAIL as well, and I believe it's going to be Jordan, but I have to confirm. Yeah.
Okay, so this is hosted by Alaska Brewing Company.
It is, yeah.
So there'll be beer available and beer cocktails?
Yes. I know, it's pretty interesting, right? So there's actually, like, for example, there's going to be a beer cocktail that's using our pumpkin porter ale and then a liqueur with, like, kind of mocha tones into it.
Whoa.
So it's going to be just a delicious, yummy. We also, like, we have a white ale liqueur, a white ale, which is like our lighter orange peel beer that we add orange liqueur to as well,
okay.
And they garnish it, and it's awesome. You know, it makes you feel a little fancier, and, you know.
Are you going to be in costume?
I will be.
Okay.
I will be, for sure.
This is, as you said, this is also a fundraiser.
Yeah.
So everyone who participates will be fundraising for SAIL,
for
you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so all tickets, all beer sales go to SAIL, and then, of course, everything from the silent auction as well. And everybody who has participated is totally donating their time, which is great. I couldn't do it without them, so it's pretty special.
Okay, so this is the third annual.
Mm-hmm.
For folks who have been to the first or second annual, is there something new or exciting that's going to happen this year?
We have a couple surprises. there's going to be quite a bit more dancing, actually, this year.
Ooh.
It is a Halloween-themed year, which is different than other years. So a lot of fun music, I have to say. Last year I think we added a couple surprises, but we really tried to up it this year so that people can get a real show. You know, it's not just fashion, it's a show. You know?
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Kelsey, for coming in and talking about it. Kelsey Johnson is the coordinator for No Umbrellas Fashion Show Saturday at Centennial Hall. Doors open at
6 o'clock.
Okay. You can get tickets before or at the event.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Lisa.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO, and right now we have Mary McCafferty and Kate Pressing with the Learning Connection in the studio right now. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, thank you.
So how are both of you involved with the Learning Connection?
Well, I'm Mary, and I am the program coordinator for the Adult Education Program at the Learning Connection. And adult education includes GED preparation and testing, English as a second language, and citizenship classes, and basic reading, writing, and math skill building.
Okay. And how about you, Kate?
Okay. And I coordinate three different programs at the Learning Connection. One is called the JobX program, and it's a youth employment program, and so I work with youth between the ages of 16 and 24 to prepare for employment and to look for employment and in some cases set up into work experiences or internships. So that's one program. And then another program is we have free computer classes at the Learning Connection. And so those classes are offered. We offer class schedules that are in the evening, and they last month-long. They are a Monday-Wednesday cycle and a Tuesday-Thursday cycle in the evening, plus some open lab opportunities in the day as well. And then the third program is the Juno Construction Academy. And the Juno Construction Academy is a program geared towards helping people that are interested in construction-related careers to receive training. The majority of our training is provided through courses at the UAS. But if somebody applies for and is selected for the Juno Construction Academy, they can take those classes for free that we place them into.
Wow, there is a lot going on at the Learning Connection.
There is. I also wanted to mention, too, that one thing that keeps our wheel turning, there are we do have a volunteer program, and we're always interested in folks who would like to volunteer to be a tutor. In particular, right now, we could use tutors to help students who are endeavoring to pass the current GED exam.
Okay, and that's why you guys are in here today, to talk about the GED stuff?
It's one reason.
One of the reasons.
Yeah.
Okay.
We want to let you know about all the Learning Connection programs for adult learners, education and employment-related programs. But my main focus here today is to just remind people that the GED is changing in 2014. It'll be a computer-based exam, not an online exam, but actually an exam where if you want to take the GED next year, you would have to find a Pearson VUE testing center, and we're in the process now of getting set up to become a Pearson VUE test site so that in 2014, when the new GED is available, students will be able to continue preparing and testing for that exam. Currently, students are attending our math and writing classes. We have many students who have already taken 3 out of the 5 exams and only have 2 left to go. And we have 2 more months of time remaining where students can finish this current test series. If they don't finish by December 20th of this year, they will lose all their scores and have to start over with the new exam. So we are still just getting the word out, encouraging people to please come in and finish. If you're interested in learning more about the GED process in general, we have a GED orientation every Monday from 10 to 12. And please give a call if you'd like to come to that.
Okay, so you have people in Juno who started the GED process, and they should finish, you're saying, the testing by December 14th?
December 20th.
20th, okay.
Would be the last testing day. And actually, this includes people in Ketchikan and Sitka, the whole entire region.
Okay.
So we have testing centers on the campuses in Ketchikan, University of Alaska Southeast. The adult education program is housed on their campus and in Sitka as well. And then, of course, our GED program here in Juneau is at CERC at 210 Ferry Way.
Okay. So, and if they don't complete this testing, they'll have to start all over again.
Correct.
Okay. So it's important that they contact you guys and...
Right. Especially if, you know, they only have one test left. Because right now we have a series of classes that are available to help students prepare so that they can finish. So we're busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So I've never been to the facility, which I would like to come visit. What is it like when you walk inside?
Oh, that's a great question, and we'd love to have you come, or any of the other listeners are always welcome to come and see what we do down there. But as you walk in, there's a reception area, but there's several tables that students are studying at. We have a bank of computers that are available for people to use. Those are available for job search and for improving computer skills and for their education purposes, and they can use them at any time. We've also got a great computer lab that has, I think it's 20 computers in there.
Okay.
That are all networked, and that's what we use for our computer classes when we have an actual computer class that we're offering. And so And then we have additional classrooms and then office spaces, private settings that students can meet with instructors as well, you know, to go over, you know, what is going on with their particular circumstances and things like that, or review test scores, or, you know, when you're helping them look for work and things like that, too.
How many instructors are at the Learning Center?
Right now we have three instructors. We have a math instructor who specializes in math, an instructor who teaches a distance-delivered math class. And this is a class that's actually presented out of Anchorage, and it is broadcast statewide for students who are preparing for the GED exam, and that is facilitated by a local instructor. But she also teaches all the other subjects as well, and then another part-time teacher who provides a writing class. All right now very focused on completing the testing.
Wow. And how many students, how many adults are taking advantage of the Learning Center?
Gosh, in the adult education program last year, I think our count was somewhere between 400 and 500 students, and those would be students focused primarily on reading, writing, math, skill building, GED preparation and testing, English as a second language, and citizenship classes.
And there's room for more, I presume, right?
Absolutely, right. And I think in the computer classes, we had over 200 people taking computer classes from us. And in regards to youth employment, well over 100 clients receive services through our youth employment programs. And the Construction Academy had, I think, close to 40 students that utilize that program. So, yeah, we're seeing a lot of people. And some of them are receiving services in more than one area from us. You know, it's a great to see the continuum. You know, you have somebody that has taken it and passed their GED, and then they might come see me in the JobX program and receive career guidance and prepare for employment, find employment, those kinds of things. So it's really nice to utilize all the services that we have available.
Okay, so for folks who haven't come, who haven't stopped by, who are interested, what is kind of the first way for them to make contact with you?
It's a good idea if they're curious about the GED. They could come in anytime or call 586-5718 and sign up for GED orientation, which is every Monday from 10 to 12. But really, people can walk in anytime and inquire about our range of services.
What are your hours?
We're open 8 until 4:30, Monday through Thursday, and 8 till noon on Fridays.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Mary and Kate, for coming in. There's so much going on down there, and I hope people visit you and take advantage of all the services you have to offer.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks for having us on.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Tomorrow, Shona Strausser will be hosting. We'll hear Rena Sims. We'll be here to talk about the St. Vincent de Paul Turkey Drive. We'll talk with Catherine Kell about the Canvas Halloween Party. Guy Unzicker will be here to talk about the UAS publication Title Echoes. We'll learn about this weekend's Zombie Run. And Nancy DeCherney will be here for Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more, all on tomorrow's Juno Afternoon. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. We're also online on KTOO.org.
There's no questions. There's a disconnect between open enrollment and the individual responsibility timeframes in the first year only, and those are going to be addressed.
Will the government give people more time to sign up for health care?
It's Wednesday, October 23rd, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Blau. Coming up, if the government's health care...